All right, friends, here we are. This is the beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 97. Not sure, you know, how many of these in a row we'll do or whether 97 will just be a self-contained program. We are on page 324 of the Cancer chapter, chapter on the sign Cancer, and we were entering this section in which the Tibetan has said, let us briefly consider for a few minutes the effects of the ray influences as they focus through the seven planets upon the man born in the sign Cancer. And the seven planets, we may remember, were the direct and indirect influences of the cardinal cross. Mars, Mercury and Uranus for Aries, indirect influence. The Moon and Neptune, direct influence for Cancer, since we are discussing Cancer. Venus and Uranus, and I suppose Saturn also, indirect influences from Libra, and Venus and Saturn again, indirect influences from Capricorn. One wonders whether, since some of these appear more than once, whether their strength is multiplied, even though they are indirect influences upon the Cancerian subject. And the indirect influences had established growing soul potency over the years, as of course the cardinal cross does not exert its true nature, its true spirit influence, until much later in the evolutionary process. So DK is saying here, it is here that there will be found certain basic indications as to the nature and the processes of the law of rebirth, which we recognize is so closely associated with Cancer. It would appear that as yet only two rules are posited in connection with the return of an ego to physical incarnation. And then this would be what we call the ego, in this case, is the soul on the higher mental plane. So this is, this is the soul in incarnation. The first of the rules is that if perfection has not been achieved, then the soul must return and continue the perfecting process on Earth. Interesting about the word perfection. Perfection is a city found upon the fourth level of the Atmic Plane. So the word perfection is associated with the fourth ray. And interestingly, with the fourth sign, Cancer, the sign of rebirth, carrying this process through, let's just say Cancer carries the process through until the fourth initiation, at which time return is no longer necessary because a relative perfection has been achieved. So we see all these number fours, the number four in relation to the sign Cancer and the necessity to achieve the fourth initiation before return can be no longer compelled. One may return according to choice, and that choice will have to do with service, of course. The second is that the impulse predisposing the ego to such action is some form of unsatisfied desire. Well, I suppose as long as there is, with respect to the Four Noble Truths, the desire to for phenomenal existence in the lower three worlds, there will be return. So think of the Four Noble Truths. And the desire for existence in the phenomenal, worlds. Okay. So, DK is telling us that both these statements are true in part. And generic, in effect, in other words, they apply to everyone, general, but they are only partial truths and incident to larger truths, which have not yet been sensed or noted accurately by esotericists. So we're interested in these larger truths, not just the truths arising from the individual orientation toward the phenomenal plane. So until the fourth initiation has been achieved, there will be return, and there will be unsatisfied desire for the phenomenal worlds until the fourth initiation is achieved. But what are these larger truths? These lesser truths, he tells us, are secondary in nature and are expressed in terms of the three worlds of human evolution, of personality intent, and of time-space concepts. But what is happening in the realm of the soul? That is our question. What is happening in the realm of the soul? Basically, it is not desire which prompts return, but will and knowledge of the plan. So a higher type of motive is involved here, and it has the intent of fulfilling a group purpose. It is not the need for achieving an ultimate perfection which goads the ego on to experience in form, for the ego is already perfect. Well, what is meant here? The ego is perfect with respect to the three lower worlds, although it has not experienced everything within these worlds. Certainly the solar angel has. And if we consider the ego to be the monad, it is certainly perfect with respect to the lower worlds. The highest ego, as the monad, is certainly perfect with respect to the three lower worlds. The main, because there's great knowledge stored within the monad, and it has been singled out for employment in the process of redeeming the lesser lives, the lower lives in the lower three worlds. So the main incentive for incarnation, rebirth, is sacrifice and service to those lesser lives that are dependent upon the higher inspiration which the spiritual soul can give, and the determination that they too may attain a planetary status equivalent to that of the sacrificing soul. Well, the sacrificing soul is involved here. The sacrificing solar angel is involved, and also the sacrificing monad, because we as monads are lords of ceaseless, persevering devotion, and it is not only for our increase of potency and ability that we descend, but to lift the lower lives, although perhaps that motive is no longer evident to the immersed consciousness. But perhaps we can get back in touch with that motive. Certainly this is the reason that the solar angels descend, to lift us as sacrificing monads higher to the goal. I suppose that if we came forth in our intended sacrifice without their aid, it would take us much longer to carry forward that sacrifice. So there is a kind of a Cancerian motive here, a protective, a helpful motive, a parental motive, you almost might say, and one begins to think of the fifth, almost liberated creative hierarchy ruled by the sign Cancer and its relationship to the Capricornian hierarchy of solar angels. There must be a very great sacrifice operative with the higher, with that higher Cancerian hierarchy, leading to influence upon the Capricornian hierarchy, which has influence upon us. We are the Scorpionic hierarchy. So, we have to change our perspective here. It's not the tiny unit which is returning for some kind of selfish motive, but the motive is really sacrifice and service, just the way a parent under Cancer, the influence of the parental sign Cancer, offers so much of sacrifice and service to its offspring, to the lesser lives, to its children, who have to rise unto its status. The general analogy repeats itself. We, as human beings, will rise to the feet, as it were, of the solar angel, and the lesser lives are on their way to becoming human, and we are in the process of helping them do so. Thus, our attention to the lower kingdoms, to the animal kingdom, our service to the animal kingdom, and to the plant kingdom, and even to the mineral kingdom, and also, interestingly enough, our service to the kingdom of lunar lords, which derives from an earlier chain altogether. It is in order eventually to negate the time-space concept and to prove it an illusion that the door in Cancer opens to the sacrificing, serving soul. And many of us are in process of attempting to negate this illusion. We are in process of attempting to negate this most persistent illusion of the reality of time and space as we experience them. Our experience of the cosmos is the experience of a great illusion, and the truth of its nature is something other than that which is presented in time-space terms to our immersed consciousness. So, we are subject to the time-space illusion, and the door in Cancer opens repeatedly to give us repeated opportunities to overcome this kind of subservience to ignorance. So DK is correcting a number of the theosophical errors, misapprehensions, and looking at things in wider terms. Bear this always in mind as you study the subject of rebirth, an act of will, service, and sacrifice. For larger purposes than that of the sacrificing unit or sacrificing creative hierarchy, in this case the hierarchy of human monads. An act of will, service, sacrifice for redemptive and uplifting purposes. When we talk about the lives or the cyclic appearances of the reincarnating unit, we so often think strictly in terms of the progress of that unit, but what was the descent for in the first place. Certainly it can be no entirely pleasant thing for the monad to descend into the lower worlds, not only to prove itself, but to spend many millions of years in what the Tibetan is sometimes called, by the quaint words, durance vile. Durance vile. So this, the sacrifice of the solar angels is also at their expense. And even the planetary logos, when he took over responsibility for, see, because that's what the word sacrifice means. Sacrifice, spell it. Sacrifice means to take over. So when the planetary logos took over this sacrifice, this responsibility for lifting lower lives, he was somewhat distressed at first, according to the old commentary. I wonder if we can find it here. Sought not this. Sought not this. Throne. There, maybe that's the place. Well, this is most interesting, and we go back here to, I think it is Esoteric Psychology 2, where we have the planetary logos descending, perhaps in the form of Sanat Kumara. It's a discussion of the law of sacrifice. And even on that high level, the reaction was one of the realization of the limitation of scope. Our planetary logos is under the Saturnian impulse, and Saturn, Mars, and our planet comprise the mental nature, the astral nature, and the etheric physical nature, respectively, of a great third-ray entity, we are told. So because of the third ray, there is the necessity of working in that aspect of matter which has been inherited from the previous solar system. So he entered into life and knew it to be death. He took a form and grieved to find it dark. Whatever grief may be on the level of the great logos in whom we live and move and have our being, we cannot know. But this is an amazing truth about the planetary life. The one in whom we live and move and have our being. So the sacrificial tendency is a tendency greater than that, than the individual unit, and there is a veil of symbology dropped here. The Tibetan warns us, in this there is ever a risk, for men interpret all they read and hear and experience in terms of themselves, the anthropomorphic perspective. Ours is the psychology of a divine rebel. And if you think about our planetary logos as having a first-ray monad, one can understand that when such a being is subjected to external necessity, there may be rebellion. There's been rebellion in various places. There's been rebellion in the previous solar system, we are told. Always a certain group will rebel. So one wonders if that rebellion took place on the equivalent to our particular planet within the previous major solar system. Perhaps. But anyway, as the old commentary says, and I think we can get the idea, he entered into life and knew it to be death. He took a form and grieved to find it dark. He drove himself forth from the secret place. I suppose this is the place where he is the planetary logoic soul and is undertaking work within the 18 lower cosmic subplanes, or even denser work upon the cosmic physical plane. He drove himself forth from the secret place and sought the place of light, and light revealed all that he sought the least. he craved permission to return. Well, it sounds, you know, we can interpret this in human terms. The world is too much with me. I want to go back to the high heavenly worlds where I can be more my true self. I don't want to continue subjected to the conditions of the lower life. Or sometimes, as translated, I know this is my last incarnation. Why? Because it's so painful here, and I know this is my last incarnation. Not very rational. He sought the throne on high and him who sat thereon, which I believe will be the solo logos. He said, I sought not this. I looked for peace, for light, for scope to serve, to prove my love and to reveal my power. Light there is none, peace is not found, let me return. Well, he would have to generate these things from himself, would he not? It's as if he thought there would be more assistance to his intention than there actually was. But he who sat upon the throne turned not his head. The Solo Logos did not, it seems, acknowledge the request to return and abandon the incarnation that was taken. He seemed not e'en to listen nor to hear. But as is often the case, something circumstantial happens which turns the mind and intention of the one who would return. I remember in the sixth ray formula, how can I break my tunnel down? What must I do? And no answer came. But another pilgrim in the dark came up and groping found the follower, saying, lead us and others to the light. And the follower had no choice but to acquiesce out of understanding, pity, compassion, having trodden that road himself. He was now in a position to become a leader, no longer the follower. So circumstances indicated what must be done. So, but from the lower sphere of darkness and of pain, and I suppose the lower sphere is very much the three lower systemic worlds, although from another perspective we can consider it the 18 lower subplanes, which are systemic. From the lower sphere of darkness and of pain, a voice came forth and cried, we suffer here, we seek the light. We need the glory of an entering God. And here the Tibetan says, I can find no other words except these last two to express the ancient symbol from which I am translating. The Tibetan has learned to read these things, and we will have to learn this type of interpretation as well. Lift us to heaven. Enter, O Lord, the tomb. Tomb as the lower worlds. You know, the resurrection of Christ from the tomb is the resurrection of the Master Jesus from the lower worlds, the dense worlds, into the etheric worlds. Enter, O Lord, the tomb. Raise us into the light and make the sacrifice. Break down for us the prison wall and enter into pain. Rather irresistible words than one can think of those who may call out to us in a similar way, and who, when we were self-aware monads contemplating the great journey, called to us in a similar manner. In a way, we are part of the descent, being cells within the planetary logos, part of his descent into the lower worlds of pain. The Lord of Life returned. He liked it not, and hence the pain. Because there is resistance against the task. And the pain we experience has something to do psychologically on a planetary level with the attitude of our planetary logos as a divine rebel. And to a certain extent, all of us are sharing that attitude. Because we are, in a sense, no matter where our monadic origin may be, we are aspects at this time of his nature. So this was worth studying, because there is an entering God, and we are an entering God in our own little microcosmic way, and we enter and re-enter and re-enter, all for the purpose of better fitting ourselves to carry out this uplifting, redempting process, redemptive process. It rather turns motive on its ear, doesn't it? I mean, we so often think in terms of ourselves and our particular microcosmic requirements, and not in terms of the service that we are offering others. So in themselves, rebirth and reincarnation are misleading terms, and he gives a much better way of understanding it. And cyclic impulsion, an intelligent, purposeful repetition, and conscious in-breathing and out-breathing would describe more accurately this cosmic process, because we are parts of greater deities who have taken on a great redemptive role within the substance of the Soul of Logos, and he is well, and on it goes. So the process is cosmic, inasmuch as great deities do as we do, and we do as we do because we are part of the process in which they are involved. We are involved ourselves in an incarnation of a planetary logos, and he is involved as a kind of an aspect or chakra of the solar logos. He is involved in that process of cyclic impulsion, intelligent, purposeful repetition, and conscious in-breathing and out-breathing, which the Soul of Logos has undertaken, probably on behalf of a still greater cyclic impulsion of the cosmic Logos, and on it goes. It is, however, difficult for you to grasp the idea, the Tibetan says, for it necessitates the ability to identify oneself with the one who thus breathes, the planetary logos, and the entire theme must therefore remain relatively obscure until initiation has been taken. And what is the implication here? That I suppose that initiation is the process of identifying with the planetary logos. The planetary logos is in process of in-breathing and out-breathing. He is sending certain of his cells into the lower worlds, and he retracts them. This is part of his redemptive mission. We are part of the redemptive mission of this entering God. Esoterically speaking, the point of greatest interest lies in the fact that it is group rebirth which is taking place all the time, and that the incarnation of the individual is only incidental to this greater happening. So we cyclically return with those of our own ray. Cyclically returning with those on our soul ray. But the cycles do interpenetrate, because the cycles are different. And there will come a time when the time will come, or has come, when individuals on all the different rays have spent time in incarnation together. Perhaps at the moment we are not sharing incarnational space with so many of those on the fourth ray, if we are, let us say, part of this great second ray redemptive process, but there will be a time, or has been a time, when the two and four have been incarnated together, and or the two and five, and the two and seven, and so forth. So groups are coming in according to cyclic spans, which are known, I suppose, more fully internally. The cyclic span of 500 years is correlated with the second ray, but then so must 50-year cycles. A span of 900 years, and hence 90-year cycles, will be associated with the third ray. And cycles of 100 years or 1,000 years or even 10 years associated with the first. So all the different ray types manage to spend incarnational time in each other's presence, one way or another, and at some time or another. All incarnational types spend time in incarnational presence with each other. Maybe I should say here, all soul ray types, because I think it is largely on the basis of soul ray that they come in. Remember, we're in the Cancerian chapter, and we're discussing the great law of cyclic impulsion, of intelligent, purposeful repetition. You know, we have here rotary motion to a degree, and Cancer is the third ray sign, but this rotary motion is also spiral cyclic in a way, because there's always a rising which is intended to occur based upon greater success in each successive, greater spiritual success in each successive incarnation. So all this has been largely ignored or forgotten because of the intense and selfish interest in personal experience and living, evidenced in the speculative details. He doesn't dignify the consideration of past lives with a word other than speculative. Evidence in the speculative details, and then individual return given in the current so-called occult books, because they really aren't, as they are ignorant of some of the larger and foundational purposes behind the rebirthing process. Most of which, not all, but most of which are largely inaccurate and certainly unimportant. I'm wondering what he was thinking here. What may he have been thinking of the book called The Lives of Alcyone, or The Lives of Alcyone? This is a book written by C.W. Leadbeater and Annie Besant, in which at least some 50 incarnations of Krishnamurti are undertaken. It sounds like mostly they were Aryan incarnations, but since the Aryan or fifth root race has been going along now for some million years or more, there was plenty of room to undertake a study of incarnations, and sometimes thousands of years occurred between the incarnations that were studied and the places that were cited as the places of appearance of that incarnating entity, who now is Krishnamurti, were probably geographically unknown to us. Certainly the countries were unknown. But D.K., I think, at one point suggested that this book was undertaken to show the personality perspective largely. Lives of Alcyone. No, I guess it's not here in the teaching. Okay, but they were from a personal perspective largely, and whatever may have been the development in terms of the reincarnating soul and the redemptive purposes achieved were not so much discussed. It was more about the progress of this entity. I think in a way it was very interesting. I read that in early days. Quite an adventure story in a way. And you got to meet along the way the personality aspects of the Tibetan, the Buddha, the Lord Maitreya, Master K.H., and some rather villainous character who went by the pseudonym Scorpio. They all had their particular names, so you could trace them through all these appearances of Krishnamurti, the one who is now known as Krishnamurti. So it made a little bit of, let's say, adventurous reading and a bit like a science fiction fantasy. But apparently the Tibetan is looking for more, hoping that more will be revealed in future incarnation studies. Obviously, in the new esoteric schools, the incarnations of those who apply must be, as he says, looked up. And the karmic suitability of the applicant for the esoteric school process has to be determined. So all of this is a rather rigorous trial to which we cannot subject students at this time. We don't have the means of doing that. We're not qualified of doing that. These are bridging efforts towards the kinds of schools which will appear during the Aquarian Age and, as DK seemed to say, later with the rays and initiations later in the Aquarian Age. An intelligent understanding of the plan is needed before the real truth, anent reincarnation, can emerge with clarity in the public consciousness. The plan, of course, is planetary in scope and has to do with the incoming of rays and their cycles and what is to be accomplished through the incoming and outgoing of these ray lords and the groups of souls who, as it were, ride in and out on these ray incarnations. Groups of souls come into incarnation cyclically and together in order to further the plan. For instance, at the moment we're in the midst of a great spiritual propaganda effort, as would befit the expression of those who are upon the second ray. Important scientific discoveries have been made during the past 100 years. The fifth ray ashram has been in incarnation. The first ray ashram is reorganizing everything politically. There is an incoming of those upon the seventh ray in large numbers to straighten out the mess left by the sixth ray group, which was far more oriented toward other worldly matters than toward the correct pattern to be established upon the earth. All these incoming ray groups of souls have their purpose within the plan of the planetary logos for a particular cycle, equinoctial age, a processional age. We're entering now the processional age of Aquarius. The planetary logos has certain plans. The ray groups are instrumental in carrying out those plans, and the decanates of Aquarius and the rulers of those decanates will also officiate, sort of supervise developments during periods of some 720 years during the Aquarian cycle. So the important thing to grasp here is the group, idea of group incarnation. Groups of souls come into incarnation cyclically and together in order to further the plan and to permit that interplay to proceed between spirit and matter, especially in this Aquarian age when the highest and the lowest must meet. to permit that interplay to proceed between spirit and matter which makes manifestation possible and which extends the working out of the divine ideas as they exist in the mind of God. We're in an Aquarian at the moment, entering an Aquarian seventh ray age. And the word of power, the highest and the lowest meet, will be strongly in evidence. Certain of the divine ideas or idea beings, we might almost say, because an idea is a being, certain of the ideas are to be released into time and space according to the divine plan, which interprets the goals of the ultimate divine purpose. Ideas have to have their time. Ideas must await their time for release into the lower worlds. So we have been told that nothing is more powerful than an idea whose time has come. There are many ideas that await release for, let us say, the age of Capricorn, which is still some 2,200 years away or more. And their time has not come. But certain ideas, like brotherhood, for the last 720 years, let's say illumination or education, ideas of responsibility, global responsibility under Saturn, under the first 720 years of the Aquarian Age. These are the kinds of ideas whose time has come. Ideas will be, I think, ray correlated, and they will be planetarily correlated. And all of this dance, this cyclic dance of incoming and outgoing, is controlled by the intention of the planetary logos, who in a way orchestrates these cyclic impulsions of incarnation and abstraction from incarnation. When the plan, as the hierarchy understands it, is more familiar in its objectives and its modes of functioning upon the outer plane of life. In other words, we have to know the cycles. We must know something more about the incoming and outgoing cycles. We shall see a complete change in the presentation of the teaching concerning the law of rebirth, the incoming groups and their purpose within the plan will be emphasized. We can all already see large groups of people which have very different objectives. I was looking at recently at some of the apparent irrationality of some of the sixth ray groups that are still in incarnation, and how retrogressive they appear to be. I was reading about some medical students and even medical teachers who were walking out on lectures on evolutionary biology and the theory of evolution as presented in medical schools. Why should we learn this stuff, this nonsense, when it conflicts with our beliefs? So I thought, well, where is science here? Where is the great fifth ray group, which has struggled so hard to establish many of these facts and theories supported by many facts? Certainly evolution is a great law. I mean, it may not work exactly as Charles Darwin presented it, but in principle, it does. And it's fairly easy to modify the theory of evolution so that it supports the larger theosophical perspective. So here is a very strong sixth-ray group and its representatives denying what the fifth-ray group, representing the Aquarian Age, has worked hard to establish. And others of the ray groups will also be denied by this rather recalcitrant group of sixth-ray souls who is on the way out of incarnation within another 120 years out of incarnation. So we see this dance going on of the different emphases within the ray groups, and some of them are obstructive and others are progressive, and in the friction perhaps the karma is worked out and the troublous transitions are experienced, and hopefully without derailing or unduly delaying the intended process. Okay, we shall see more clearly in these days to come when the process of group incarnation is understood and the law of rebirth is understood in group terms. We shall see more clearly the existence synthesis of the divine plan as it manifests in time, the building towards the manifestation of the divine purpose to be achieved at the end times, whatever those end times really are. Probably we're looking at seven scheme rounds, or if we suddenly accelerate and do as well as Venus, maybe five scheme rounds. The end times are certainly not the rather ludicrous expectation that the world is coming to an end now and now and now. We haven't even experienced the judgment day, which many will consider, I suppose, the end times, and yet evolution on earth with those who are still treading the path will be ongoing even after that time. So we're nowhere near the end times with respect to our earth. The basic relations as they manifest in space, because space is relational, the developing effect as they demonstrate in groups, these are energies demonstrating, the evolving understanding as intellect merges into the intuition which will reveal through pure reason, the intended relationships in time and space, the fivefold nature of the logoic expression, planetary logoic, solar logoic, as it unfolds itself through the five kingdoms, including the kingdom of the soul. I mean, how can we understand reincarnation until we can understand something of the nature of the kingdom of the soul? And this, when correctly intuitive, will produce a revelation and a presentation of this abstruse theme beyond anything at this time sensed by man. So I guess DK is telling us that our understanding of the law of rebirth according to perfection and desire is very childish. And the inbreathing and outbreathing and the cyclic impulsion and, what did he call it here, intelligent, purposeful repetition. These are phrases which hint at the kind of understanding we will have when reincarnation is presented as part of the divine plan of the planetary logos. We can see how spiritual occultism really holds many necessary secrets, which when correctly presented to humanity will produce a revolution in the perspective that human beings have upon their life. Right now, it's all pretty hopeless. in many ways and rather childish. And spiritual occultism needs intelligent presentation so that the mind and the orientation of human consciousness towards these matters can change dramatically. So it is one of the secrets of the first initiation, and these secrets are today in process of externalization. So the first initiation is coming, and so the revelation of these secrets, and then rebirth, is coming. So an entirely new understanding of man, whence, why, and whither, to use the Leadbeater terms, is coming to humanity. The divine plan will be known. The relationships between entities and their kingdoms, the effects upon each other, as there is a demonstration of different kinds of groups according to ray cycles within the context of the divine plan, seeing the whole picture under the intuition and pure reason, and all the parallel progress of the kingdoms and the interactive progress of the five kingdoms of nature. These are not things well understood at this time except by the members of the hierarchy and to a certain extent by students of occultism, but not deeply and sufficiently understood. And these are secrets of the first initiation, we are told, these five factors. But these factors will be released into human consciousness with the widespread recognition of the first initiation and its taking upon the plane of Earth as the mysteries of initiation externalize. It will be found that rebirth is in truth a magical, magnetic interplay between the form side of life and life itself. Well, doesn't that really express the seventh ray? The seventh ray is expressed in this description. We're entering a seventh ray age, and those who work with the scientists of the new age will have a largely seventh ray persuasion. First ray, fifth ray, seventh ray types will all be involved in studying the law of rebirth. And white magic, the incarnation of soul ideas and of souls, will be accepted. So the magnetism between spirit and form, or soul and form, and spirit and matter will be understood. This interplay is consciously undertaken by the soul, which is the product of the two related factors, spirit and matter, the father and the mother. The above statement is in itself complex and difficult and far from easy to grasp. It, however, expresses a significant fact which the old commentary phrases as follows. Well, interesting how elusive is the teaching that is being presented to us in this Cancerian chapter. Vague, the teaching, perhaps, all relating to the fact that we are dealing with great entities that find themselves upon the cardinal cross, and we're dealing with the factor of manifestation, which is the theme of Cancer. How is it put? Creation, manifestation, legislation, initiation, when we move from Aries to Cancer to Libra to Capricorn. So the study of white magic will emerge, and thereby the study of reincarnation and also the incarnation of ideas and soul-inspired plans will be understood in the context of white magic. And we as souls, consciously, in our egoic nature, undertake to relate to the three lower worlds and then find ourselves as the soul in incarnation. There are many illusions that have to be dispelled. I think we have the terminology, we have some of the concepts, but have we arrived at the point of realization? So what is it here that the old commentary says? Those who are demanding to be saved have cried aloud. Their voices penetrate into the formless worlds and there evoke response. Well, this can be an inchoate invocation which is not yet conscious, just the very condition of the lower lives sounding and heard in the higher worlds is a kind of cry. But there's also the cry of human beings who cry for assistance from still greater agencies. Those who in distant eons had pledged themselves to save and serve respond. These can be the monads such as we are. These can be solar angels. These can be great logos, such as the planetary logos who found himself in a dark and conflicted place. Their cry, too, rings forth, and ringing penetrates into the dark and distant places within the worlds of form. So there are these higher saving agencies. The whole aspect of the will throughout cosmos is to lift the lower while being lifted by the higher. And thus a vortex is established and kept alive by the constant dual sound of those who invoke salvation and those who respond and whose note is carried into the places from which the invocation comes. And then a touch is made, and for a space and during time, this is a beautiful phrase which could be pondered, the two are one, the saving souls and the units to be served. So we're reminded in our own case of the fusion of soul and personality. The soul-infused personality is the expression of the oneness of the saving souls and the units to be served or saved. Slowly the vision of the saving one becomes a light which guides the crying ones. Notice the crying ones suggest the solar plexus and the element of desire into the place of light. The cry issues forth sometimes from deep within the heart, but most often from the dissatisfaction of present circumstances within the solar plexus. An aspect, I suppose, we could say, of divine discontent. This is a wonderful section from the old commentary and shows that magical interplay which has produced the cyclic impulsion of the law of rebirth. This journeying forth into the lower spheres by a higher entity is all for the purpose of lifting the ones who cry out from the lower sphere. They are upwardly oriented, whether or not they are conscious of this. Their pain is an invocation to those in the higher worlds who have the means of alleviating this pain. I'll read it once again as a whole. Those who are demanding to be saved have cried aloud. Their voices penetrate into the formless worlds and there evoke response. Those who in distant eons have pledged themselves to save and serve respond. Their cry, too, rings forth, and ringing penetrates into the dark and distant places within the worlds of form. And thus a vortex is established and kept alive by that constant dual sound. And then a touch is made, and for a space and during time, the two are one, the saving souls and the units to be served. Slowly, the vision of the saving one becomes a light which guides the crying ones into the place of light. We are reminded of the individualization process and that touch of individualization. Animal man invoked, he cried out toward the higher aspect of his nature. This was received by the solar angels, who, according to the proper moment of planetary history, the awakening of the planetary heart, descended, a touch was made, illumination was established within the mind of the crying one, and gradually that illumination under soul, culture, and nurturance became brighter and brighter until the man found within himself a guiding light, which assisted him upon the way which eventually became the path. This guiding light, fostered, nurtured by the supervising solar angel, became that internal light which could be consulted, leading the crying ones towards soul status and into the place of light, the light getting greater, more intense all the time. So each one of us is carrying this induced light, which we can consult as we move towards an ever fuller expression of the light. So the old saying, you know, ask, and you shall, you shall receive. Seek, and you shall find, and knock, and it shall be opened to you. This asking, this seeking, this knocking is an invocation, and always there is a response from higher entities. Okay, well, we will say then that we have reached the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 97, A, page what? Page 326. And we are beginning. We are going on to beginning EAA 97B, page 326. No need, perhaps, to turn the recorder off. We can simply move forward. We're pretty close to the hour. I'd like to keep these programs in our sections. Seems it will be more convenient in the future.